seat in the big chair.
Hi, Sam.
Yes.
Good changes.
They keep getting bigger. So good morning, everybody, and welcome to the City Council session. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to City Council session. We have a very special guest. We have Violet, who wanted to, on Twitter, wanted to meet the mayor. And she was very nice to draw me this very beautiful picture. Isn't that nice? And yes. You're doing very well. And she's going to bang the gavel. That'll call City Council to session. And then you have to go back to school, right? Oh, it's summer. Okay. So here, you take this, and you just, it's like whacking that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I want a pair of shoes like yours. All right. City Council will come to session. I guess I have to do this legally. Good morning, Sue. How are you?
Good morning. Fine, thank you.
Can you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with proclamation. Yes. And we have some special guests. So let's do the special guests. First, we have six visiting graduate students with us this morning from Portland State University Hatfield School of Government's Oregon Fellows Summer Program. They are doing a job shadow day hosted by the Office of Management and Finance. So, boy, does this nation need some good finance people. A 10-week internship with public agencies throughout the Portland area, looking at professional fields from financial analysis, management, program management, project management. We're glad that you're here and study hard. And then I'm pleased to read the following proclamation. Whereas how we make the transition to an independent renewable energy future will define us as Oregonians for generations to come, and whereas Oregon's coastline is among the handful of locations in the world that has abundant ocean energy, and whereas the Oregon Wave Energy Trust, a public-private partnership funded by the Oregon Business Development Department through the Oregon Innovation Council, is working to responsibly develop this new industry and its economic potential. And whereas the City of Portland supports the advancement of policies that help drive demand for renewable energy, now therefore I, Sam Adams, Portland, Mayor of Portland, Oregon, City of Portland, the City Roses, do hereby proclaim July 31st through August 7th to be Wave Week. Congratulations, Wavers. Now we will go to the first communications. Can you please read the title for item number 795?
Request of David Foster to address council to propose a change in the way local improvement districts are administered.
Mr. Foster, welcome. You'll have 3 minutes. That clock in front of you will help you count it down. We just need your first and last name.
David Foster. Good morning, Mayor Adams and council members. Change the way those affected directly by an LID are represented before council. Those of us that are not in favor have not been given fair and equal representation. Our concerns of cost were dismissed with less concern than someone waving away a nuisance fly, as if $800 a month for 20 years is of no notice. Andrew stated that a project of this size could easily be double that. Apparently $600 a month is not an issue for Andrew. It is for my family. Instead of being concerned if I can afford it, when asked what happens if we can't pay, he simply stated that the city would put a lien on the property. My neighbor John, who is in a wheelchair, is also opposed to this LID. I informed him of Andrew's comment at the last council meeting that John would be exempt under a special program. I asked him if he didn't have to pay, would he still be against the LID? He asked me if our portion would be increased, and I told him no. He then asked me how much our portion was to be, and I told him $800 a month for 20 years. He said, not if you can't afford it. That's a neighbor. I'm not sure what to call this current way of doing business of LIDs is. The property owners to the west of us were exempt. They all had previously voted no to an LID. Two of these property owners will be subject to restrictions on their property because of this LID, yet they have no representation. Andrew stated there would be no acquisition of property in this LID, yet this proposal intends to take their right of way. Further, their vote of no will not be counted to balance the scale. The two largest properties who gave a yes vote had much to gain and don't adequately represent the neighborhood. One is a corporation who is now guaranteed no loss of land that is 16 feet into the right-of-way for almost the entire length of their property. The other is a developer who will allow his neighbors to help him save money for required improvements like sidewalks, streets, and sewers. Also, my concerns for safety, no representation. Andrew states the LID will solve my concerns, yet there will be increased bike and pedestrian traffic at increased speeds. He can only say, sign the petition, and we will work out the details. I had made a statement that my liability will be increased due to this. He denied this and said, once paved, it would be the city's problem. Again, my position is not being represented because if I hit someone, the responsibility falls on me. Those in favor of the LID had Andrew, the LID administrator, with all the time he needed, the fire marshal at hand, and a PowerPoint picture show. We got 3 minutes each. Andrew then got additional time to explain why all our concerns were not valid or worthy of note. This is not representation. This is a stacked deck. This needs to change. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you taking the time to come to council. Can you please read communications item number 796?
Request of John Boblett to address council regarding the private for hire regulations in the city code.
Mr. Boblett, hi, welcome.
Good morning.
My name is John Boblett, and I am the owner of the Portland Pedal Lounge, a large pedal-powered vehicle designed to transport 16 people. The Pedal Lounge doesn't have an engine or electric motor. It's completely human-powered. It's available for reserve tours in Portland, and I'm based in the Mississippi District. I envision that my Pedal Lounge is becoming one of Portland's signature attractions on the short list of must things to do here in the city. I've been working for a long time to obtain my business permit, but now I'm at an impasse over an issue concerning the required additional insured certificate. This certificate comes from my insurer, but must contain specific language required by the city. But my carrier has declined to accept the city's language, saying that Portland is demanding that all liability for any incident for any reason occurring on my tours will be mine to bear. My insurer does not believe that it is in their best interest or fair and equitable to be held liable for an incident that is determined to be caused by a defect in Portland's infrastructure. For example, while on a tour, we hit a pothole. A guest falls from the bike and is injured. Portland says I should have avoided that pothole. The insurer says they will not be held liable for the city not maintaining its streets. Another could be that during a tour, a fire hydrant cracks open, water sprays out, and knocks a guest from the bike. Portland says that this occurred in the course of the Pedal Lounge doing business and passes that liability to me. Yet another would be that my bike and guests are pedaling through an intersection when the traffic lights fail and an incident occurs. Later, the cause was determined to be a failure of the city's signal equipment, and still the city is absolved of liability. So it becomes clear why my insurer has issues with the city's required language. My specific problem is that there's only one insurer in the U.S. that provides superior coverage for these bikes at an affordable cost. I and many others have diligently searched for an alternative carrier and found only inferior coverage at wildly inflated prices. There are currently 18 similar businesses operating across the U.S., and they are all insured with the same carrier and all have resolved any insurance issues with the exception of Portland. I feel that my Pedal Lounge is everything that Portland advertises itself to be: bicycles, green and eco-friendly, creating jobs, entrepreneurship, enjoyment of craft beer, tourism, creative and fun, stimulating urban areas, a liaison between cyclists and automobile drivers, outdoors, unique, and on and on. Last week, four visitors from Memphis asked me if they could go for a ride, and I had to tell them no because I haven't been able to get a permit from the city, but I do know that Nashville has a similar bike. They said, well, that's fine, but we're not in Nashville. We're here in Portland, and we want to see Portland from the vantage point of your bike. In a short time, every U.S. major city will have their own version of my pedal lounge. It would be a shame and a mystery if Portland, Oregon, Cycle City USA was absent from that group. It's my hope that the Portland City Attorney will work with my insurer to find a compromise and allow the pedal lounge to be in business. Thank you.
So, Mr. Boblett, I had a briefing from staff on this issue. I have seen this out on the streets.
Yes.
Are you running it without a permit?
I'm running it without a profit. The Revenue Bureau will allow me to do tours for no compensation, no tips, okay, no back rub. So I'm asking my guests to make a donation to charity of their choice.
Are you asking the, so if I could just spend just a few seconds.
Sure.
I want to try to be helpful here.
Yes, thank you.
In the other cities, has the city been indemnified at all?
Yes, the city is included, but there's a limitation to making the vehicle responsible, the owner and the vehicle responsible for what happens on the vehicle and not anything outside of the vehicle.
Okay, so that's helpful. And are you seeking to have drinking while pedaling?
That would be charming, but not yet. I'm interested in just getting the vehicle out on the streets and doing pub crawls.
Okay. I'll give you my card in just a second, and if you could email me the insurer, mm-hmm, and if you have examples of the other city agreements, that would help us a lot.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. Sue, can you please read the title for communications item number 797?
Request of Barbara Booz to address council regarding root barrier design. Is Barbara here?
Yes.
Very good.
Why is everybody here?
Hi, welcome to City Council.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Go ahead and begin. She'll pass out as soon as you start talking. She has to push a button.
I have to push a button?
No. Sue has to push
a
button.
I'll push a button. Go ahead. I'm not going to read. I'm just going to talk because I haven't had the time to prepare.
Okay.
Okay.
We like that better.
And my name is Barbara Booz, and I had the honor after 7 years to have Mr. Charles Myrick come over as a city inspector and look at my property situation in regards to the nuisance from next door. And and he met with my contractor, and my contractor is West Coast Gardens, and his estimate for the root barrier design is on the back. And we have a situation here where Charles decided that because of the condition of my next-door neighbor's property, that it would be good to remove all the trees and the bushes 5 feet from my fence line. And I don't know what the exception is. Another neighbor told me that this is an exception to an ordinance. And my contractor, we looked at the structure of my garage, and we looked at the structure of my house and the roots growing up to it, and how my garage is collapsing. and there was a flood in my basement last December. There were 16 gallons of water in 43 minutes. And so I tried to email these pictures over. Mr. Myrick, who's a very dedicated and overworked person, he asked for the arborist report, and I arranged it in agreement with what he stated. And somehow there's been a misunderstanding under Nick Fish's, you overlook the urban forester, and he came over, and he didn't really, I asked for another appointment. That's what I did. And so I'm looking for an extension. There's something with that.
So, Mayor, we have the urban forester here. And what I would suggest, thank you for your packet. Urban forester is here, and he's going to raise his hand in a second. And he's going to talk to you for a couple minutes now, and we'll see what we can do. And then we're going to follow up.
There's also one. Thank you. You're invited to my home and to see why Charles made that decision, the exception to the rule. And
if all five of us come, we have a quorum and we get into trouble. So I'm going to say that two of us will come. We'll do a dinner, lunch, breakfast thing. And then,
Mr. Fish and Mr. Saltzman, because those are your bureaus, you're welcome to. And you can see exactly what the root barrier design. I need a copy of that post for a grant application, because the city of Portland, because I'm low income, doesn't have that over at city planning.
Mayor, my office will get engaged. The urban forester is here. If you could talk to Dave, and we'll see what
we
can
see
do.
Who Dave was?
No, right, I'm really dizzy. I have a problem with inner ear.
That's okay. Dave's right there.
Introduce himself.
Hi. I'm Dave, and we'll talk as soon as you're finished.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm very shy. This was not easy.
Thanks very much.
Ms. Booze, you did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Thank you. You are too.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Then you can have more time, please. No.
That's okay.
Now I'd like to, Sue, would you please read the title for communications item number 798?
Request of Angela Moose to address council regarding the Kenton Action Plan to act as the fiscal sponsorship for the new Kenton Community Garden Construction Grant Award.
So this is, for the rest of Portland, this is my president, the president of my Neighborhood Association of Kenton. President Moose, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Again, I'm Angela Moose, and I serve as the chair of the Kenton Neighborhood Association. And I'm here this morning to thank you, Mayor Adams, and city council members for this opportunity to share what I believe is a very inspiring example of how city government really did excel to work with the Kenton Neighborhood Association to reach our desire to develop the Kenton Community Garden Project. For several years, members of our Neighborhood Association have worked with Portland Parks and Recreation's Community Garden Program to find a suitable garden site and then able to obtain funding resources. This was a long, drawn-out process. We made contacts, we researched sites, and by the end of this past February, we were left very disappointed when our site considered at Portland Public Schools Peninsula K-8 was ultimately not available for us. We did maintain a positive attitude, however, and we kept checking back to see if there would be any potential site that could materialize within the neighborhood boundary prior to an upcoming golden opportunity for us to submit a PDC Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Community Livability Grant, which was due by May 10th. And lo and behold, a large open space owned by the Bureau of Environmental Services became a potential site, just at the same time that Commissioner Saltzman was reaching out to Kenton to ask what was happening in the neighborhood. So we were able to make a personal request for his support that the staff of BES work with Commissioner Fish and the park staff to secure the site and the documentation for the permit agreement for the Kenton Community Garden. And this was all to occur by the time the grant deadline, at this point it was less than 3 weeks. Amazingly, the permit agreement was received. Reading through it actually brought tears to my eyes to realize how really close we were to realizing our goal for the community garden, and just hopeful that the grant would provide a considerable amount of money so that we'd be able to have parks construct and manage the garden to satisfy the criteria of the grant. A call came in late July that we had been selected to receive our full grant application of $36,700, and the sequential meetings and documents have been underway to see the garden construction begin sometime this fall. I want to thank you in advance for your approval of a consent ordinance scheduled for City Council next Wednesday that will support the process of allowing nonprofits such as the Canton Action Plan to act as the KNA fiscal agent to manage the funding distribution between the PDC and parks. I want to express how much the KNA and the Canton neighborhood appreciates the efforts of both parks and BES staff's work and the fact that they moved the process forward for us. Both Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Saltzman's support was enormous. And we want to thank the PDC for recognizing that a community garden fits nicely into the livability and economic sustainability of our urban renewal area. And finally, we are looking forward to inviting all of you for our future groundbreaking and then later grand opening celebrations for the new Canton Community Garden. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for those of you that might wonder, given this is my neighborhood, neighborhood association, I don't have anything to do with the decision making on this particular issue, and I don't really attend neighborhood association meetings, so that doesn't look like I'm favoring my own neighborhood association meeting. So, as she will tell you. All right. Is there any consideration to pull in any items from the consent agenda? All right. Sue, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We'll move to a 9:30 time certain. It's a report. Can you please read the title for 799?
Transmit report on cable franchise public benefits, a decade of community investment.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. As the City Council may know, the current Comcast cable franchise, are expiring at the end of this calendar year. And we are in negotiations with them right now to extend that franchise for another 10 years. I asked the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management to bring this report to Council, summarizing the public benefits provided to the community under these franchises for the past 10 years. These benefits have enabled the investment of substantial dedicated capital funds for community technology, primarily from the 3% Public Education Grant, or PEG, capital fee, which is on your cable bill, which is on top of the 5% franchise fee. It's a 3% that's broken out on your Comcast bill. This 3% PEG fee has provided critical support for many years, enabling us to meet the capital needs of Portland Community Media, the Cable Capital Grant Program, and the capital needs supporting the city's ERNI system. These community technologies investments have had a high impact and have had, although a relatively low profile over the years, but they remain overseen by our staff and dispersed annually by the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission as authorized through our public budget process. And I should add that I've personally seen and appreciated the good work of the Capital Grant Program and the INET in many ways over the years, including state-of-the-art telephones in schools, classrooms. I think most of you, when you think of a classroom, you think there's an old phone on the wall somewhere, but thanks to our Capital Grant Program and our INET, we now have in many schools, and we'll hear more about that, state-of-the-art phones that take messages and everything so that a teacher is really well-equipped in the classroom. And also, through capital grants, we are able to provide essential services at our Gateway Center for Domestic Violence. Through the capital grants of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, we were able to establish the technology at that center at 102nd and East Burnside for survivors to obtain restraining orders remotely. So the judge is sitting in a courtroom in Multnomah County Courthouse over here, but the application for the restraining order can be done 102nd East Burnside, and they can see each other and talk to each other and have translators and all that, and makes it a lot easier for survivors than many people are just don't want to come downtown or they don't want to be in the courthouse. So it's a lot easier to do that with the support of the Gateway service staff as well. So in the fall of 2010, a cable grant, I think I mentioned that. So since so we expect a renewed Comcast cable franchise, and it will be presented to the council later this year. But prior to that, I thought it's important for council to have an opportunity to hear more about some of the details of the investments that we have made with the 3% peg fee. And with that said, I'll turn it over to David Olson and cable program manager Julie Olmochuk to come forward to bring the presentation.
David. Thanks, Commissioner. Again, for the record, I'm David Olson. We appreciate this opportunity to report on the significant community technology dollars that the cable franchises have enabled us to reinvest back into this community over the past 10 years. As mentioned, I should stress any listing of cable franchise public benefits certainly needs to begin with cable franchise fees, the basic cable franchise fee. As the council knows, Comcast and all cable operators pay the city 5% of gross revenues from cable services as franchise fees. This is similar to compensation paid by non-cable providers such as utilities in exchange for the very valuable privilege of using our public streets in order to provide private for-profit services to customers. As you also know, franchise fees are accounted for by the city as unrestricted general fund dollars available for critical city services and budgeted by this council. It is worth noting that cable franchise fees have provided a stable, continuous source of revenue to the general fund, totaling around $44 million for the city alone in the last 10 years. But as Commissioner Saltzman stressed, we're here today primarily not to report on cable franchise fees, but to give you a summary of 10 years of investment by and for this community, transparently broken out every month on cable bills, arising from the 3% peg capital fund, and in turn reinforced by a number of other commitments inside these franchise agreements. As said, these investments by and for the community made possible by this 3% fee don't in the normal course receive a lot of special visibility apart from the focus provided by the annual public budgeting processes of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission and this council and our jurisdictional partners in the Mount Hood Commission. But they're a critical part of our overall program. As current cable franchises are set to expire on calendar year end, it is timely to review what has been accomplished over the last 10 years with the 3% peg fund and the associated commitments. The main part of our presentation will now be made by our longtime cable program manager, Julia Melchuk. However, I also want to briefly introduce, more formally later, Rob Cowie from Portland Public Schools and Sherry Swackhammer from Multnomah County. Rob and Sherry will share some further thoughts with you shortly as part of Julie's presentation. With that said, I'll turn things over to Julie.
Thank you. I'm Julie Olmochuk, for the record. Thank you, Mayor Adams and members of the council, for inviting us here today to talk about the impact of the public benefits in our community. Even though the franchises are between the city and the cable companies, they don't just serve city government. The franchise resources are pushed deep in our community. Schools, libraries, nonprofits, and local governments, and all their clients have relied on franchise resources to support their various missions and services. The collective impact of these benefits is broad and represents a local investment over the past 10 years throughout Multnomah County. I'd like to show you what that significant investment has meant here. Comcast, along with other cable franchisees in the county, pays 3% of gross revenues to a capital fund for public educational and government use of the cable system. These funds are restricted in the sense that the franchise and federal law dedicate these dollars for certain purposes. The PEG Capital Fund represents an investment within the city of about $33 million over the past decade. The Capital Fund provides resources in three areas: Portland Community Media, the Community Access Capital Grant Program, and the INET, or Institutional Network. I know most of you are familiar with Portland Community Media's mission and some of its programming, although no one could be familiar with all the programming. Just this past year, PCM supported production of over 2,700 new community television programs. But what I want to focus on today are the partnerships that PCM develops to push media tools and resources into the community. Of course, the partnerships are too numerous to list today, but I'd like to highlight a couple. Sisters of the Road and PCM collaborated to provide trainings and equipment on site at Sisters of the Road Cafe. Participants produced short films about homeless issues and experiences, and those were screened at Cinema 21 as part of the Street Stories Film Festival. PCM partnered with One Economy and brought federal stimulus dollars to Portland for a project focused on young people 14 to 21. PCM provided youth with the Digital Connectors curriculum, which combines leadership development and life skill management with digital education and production. And PCM collaborated with Wisdom of the Elders to produce a regular series that showcases Native American oral histories and traditions. Tribal members used PCM studios, special trainings, and public workshops to become proficient in multimedia production. I mention Wisdom of the Elders because it's a good example of a nonprofit getting enough skills from their PCM partnership to go out on their own. 8 such nonprofits have been awarded multimedia grants through the Community Access Capital Grant Program based on their experiences with PCM. I call this going from good to great. Good that PCM has these resources, great that the resources are repurposed in the community and help nonprofits get literate in the digital age. The Community Access Capital Grant provides funding directly to nonprofits, educators, and local governments so they can use community technology to address their constituencies' needs. This program has assisted 50 local organizations and agencies and funded over 100 projects. Many of these organizations are represented around in the room today. Obviously, I don't have time to describe all our wonderful grants, but I'll highlight some of those. And about the program. Over $12 million in grant funds have been invested throughout the county over the decade. Grantees have added more than $26 million in matching fund resources to their projects. Most grants have gone to educational institutions and nonprofit groups, and about 10% to local government agencies. Grantees identify the public benefit for their project under 4 categories funded by the program. About 50% of the grants given were for improving service delivery, another third for reducing disparities to underserved communities, and the remaining to increasing community involvement and reducing the cost of public services. The program also focuses on what constituency is going to benefit from the grant program. As you can see, 50% of the grants have helped organizations address underserved and marginalized communities in a variety of ways. These populations are included on your screen. For example, grants have supported the closed captioning here at City Hall for City Council meetings, funded several projects at high schools with high free and reduced lunch populations and students of color, including Roosevelt, Benson, BizTech, Jefferson, and Park Rose, and funded the Global Portland Voices Project at the Center for Intercultural Organizing. This project provides immigrant and refugees the media tools to frame and provide voice to issues impacting their communities. Another way to slice and dice what the grant funds support are projects focused on workforce development. 36% of the grants awarded addressed workforce development programs. These grants have supported distance learning, online access to job applications, and training in areas such as software certification, creative industries, construction, engineering, and architecture. Now I'd like to introduce Rob Cowie, Executive Director of Community Involvement and Public Affairs at Portland Public Schools. He's here to talk about what the grant program has meant to the students, teachers, staff, and families at PPS.
Thank you, Julie. Mayor Adams, members of the council, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm Rob Cowie, and I'm here on behalf of Portland Public Schools Superintendent Carol Smith who was unable to be here due to her prior commitment. But she asked me to come and tell you about the transformative impact that Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission grants have had, as Julie said, for the students, the families, the teachers, and other staff, and community members of Portland Public Schools. MHCRC's capital grants have provided needed technology upgrades in schools across our community, which have improved student learning, supported effective teaching, improved communication between parents and school staff, and made our schools safer. So of course, you're aware of the funding constraints our schools face. State funding for K-12 education is down over 20% in real dollars since 1991, and Portland is the only area school district that lacks a school construction bond. Due to these resource constraints, it can be a challenge for our schools to meet the learning technology needs of our students and teachers. That's where MHCRC has come in. Over the past decade, MHCRC has awarded 32 grants to Portland Public Schools, totaling more than $3.6 million. This investment has made it possible to upgrade computer labs and phone systems and to offer students hands-on opportunities to use and learn about technology at elementary, K-8, middle schools, and high schools across Portland Public Schools. I'd like to share with you some specific ways that MHCRC grant funds have made a difference in our schools. Let me begin by describing the transformative impact that an MHCRC grant will have at Roosevelt High School in the coming years. After years of struggle, Roosevelt High School is seeing significant gains in student achievement. This year, Roosevelt produced gains in reading, math, and graduation rates through renewed focus on effective teaching, expanded access to challenging and relevant classes, and greater parent involvement. MHCRC's grant program is supporting Roosevelt's turnaround and establishing a foundation for the future by updating technology in Roosevelt's teaching and learning environments and removing barriers that have historically impeded academic progress and instructional innovation. These are barriers that students not only face in school, but outside school. For example, only 42% of Roosevelt High School families have internet access. To help overcome these barriers, MHCRC awarded Roosevelt High School a $347,000 grant to provide 850 Roosevelt High School students with mobile computing devices and 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week access to filtered educational content through cloud-based access to the internet. This program will give students access to e-books, digital curriculum, and other tools, keeping them engaged in school and helping them gain the information and skills they need to compete in a technologically driven global economy. It will also give parents access to information about grades, attendance, and other school-related information. Teachers will also receive mobile devices beginning next year so they can begin to integrate technology into their lesson plans. At this time, we intend to make mobile devices available to students in the fall of 2012. This innovative school technology project is the first of its kind in Portland, in the region, and possibly even nationwide. It demonstrates how technology upgrades can support the core components of the school's educational improvement strategy, and it aligns with our school district's efforts to promote equity in both access to educational opportunities and in successful outcomes for students. We're grateful for MHCRC's support for this exciting initiative. Another MHCRC grant has brought important changes to every one of our schools. As Commissioner Saltzman has noted, MHCRC support has enabled us to install voice over internet phones at every school, in every classroom. For decades, PPS's outdated classrooms have lacked phones due to prohibitive installation costs relative to our limited facilities and technology budgets. The lack of phones made it difficult for parents and teachers to communicate and for schools to respond rapidly and effectively to an emergency. MHCRC grant funds provided the leverage that allowed us to place a phone in all our classrooms, which we completed last school year. Now, at many schools, parents can call classrooms directly or leave a message for a teacher. That communication promotes stronger connections between school and home, which we know is a key factor in improved student achievement. Classroom-based phones are also essential to school security. They give schools the ability to communicate vital safety information quickly and accurately throughout a building, a major improvement over the bell system schools had to rely on in the past. For example, on the first day back from spring break last year, there was a police incident in the immediate neighborhood of Vestal School. Police were searching for a suspect who was reported to be in the vicinity of the school. VoIP technology enabled the school to immediately alert all teachers to lock their doors and take security precautions through an automated message that was broadcast to each room. Had the situation developed, VoIP phones would have allowed the principal to keep teachers quickly informed with new information, particularly if there were specific threats to different parts of the building. Finally, VoIP technology has enabled us to provide every school with centralized language support for non-English speaking parents and community members. Before last year, if a non-English speaking parent called a school, we lacked a solution to provide immediate interpretation support. Often schools had to pull a teacher or an educational assistant out of the classroom to interpret if anyone at the school spoke the caller's language, or the school was unable to respond at all. As a result, many families were unable to communicate basic information to their schools about whether a child was out sick, was being picked up by an aunt, or other information. Today, every school offers automated call transfers to our language line, where interpreters in our five major languages can talk directly with non-English speakers in their native languages and forward important information to the school or pass information back to the parent. Last school year, the language line served hundreds of non-English speaking parents. We appreciate our partnership with MHCRC and the technology support they have made possible for our schools, which has improved learning environments throughout PPS, benefiting all our nearly 47,000 students.
Thank you, Rob. It just makes my heart warm to know that I've been a part of that. The last public benefit may sound complicated, but it's had a profound impact on the ability of our public institutions to provide high-level services and contain costs. This is the Institutional Network, or INET. The INET is a separate fiber network contained within Comcast system and connects nearly 300 public institution sites within Multnomah County. The INET also interconnects at BOAC and the Portland building to the city's ERNIE network, expanding its reach. The pie chart on your screen shows who currently uses the INET. As you can see, the majority are schools, reaching all seven school districts in the county, and the second largest user is Multnomah County and the libraries. This network has only been made possible for the past 10 years through a successful partnership among Comcast, Portland's Bureau of Technology Services, the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, and the public entities. Comcast owns, built, and maintains the INET. The PEG Capital Fund is managed by the MHCRC and pays for the capital cost. BTS provides the network services to the public agencies, and the agencies pay monthly service fees to fund operations and services on the INET. So why is the INET critical? As recently as last week with the Portland Broadband Strategic Plan discussion, Council heard how the bandwidth needs here are growing exponentially, and availability is essential to the health of all sectors of our community. Our public institutions are no different. Almost every school, library, and local government function touches the INET in some way. For instance, the INET supports the phone service in every classroom, as Rob has mentioned, connections for local and state courts, public internet access at libraries, and access by the public to local government information. Since we started this INET partnership in 2002, bandwidth needs have only increased. For example, the Metropolitan Educational Service District tells us that the bandwidth needs for its 75 school sites doubles approximately every 18 months. Multnomah County Library reported that its public internet computers are in use over 85% of the time, serving nearly 95,000 people just last year. The INET partnership has enabled a unique network that is both affordable to cash-strapped public institutions and scalable to meet ongoing and growing network needs. Over $11 million from the PEG Capital Fund paid for the INET infrastructure, including the fiber connections to all sites. This is a significant public investment in the network. When the INET was lit up 10 years ago, public institutions went from using T1 lines to 100 megabit connections. This was a 400% increase in bandwidth. Now those connections are at 400 megabit and a couple at a gigabit, but all connections can be increased to a gigabit. You don't really have to be a technical expert to understand that this network has been able to meet the growing needs of our local organizations. Another bottom line benefit of this INET partnership is that we've been able to keep the network affordable. In fact, when public agencies transitioned to the INET in 2002, users reported either no cost increase for the 400% increase in bandwidth, and many were able to reduce actual costs by up to 30%. Since then, INET rates have continued to remain stable for the increased bandwidth. I want to provide you some present-day context for this affordability aspect. We asked the public agencies to estimate what they might have to pay commercially for network services. You can see that our schools, libraries, and local governments most likely would be paying 2 to 3 times more for the services they currently receive through the INET partnership. Another way we've been able to keep this affordable is that public agencies share service costs at 25 sites. For example, the Multnomah County Health Clinics, the Portland Parks and Rec after-school programs, and a school district all share costs when located at a single site. Obviously, much more affordable than paying for a separate connection. As a wrap-up to my presentation, I would like to ask Sherry Swackhammer to talk about what the county has been able to do because of the INET. Sherry is the director of the Department of County Assets and chief information officer for Multnomah County. Sherry?
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm happy to be here today representing Multnomah County to talk to you about our perspective on the INET partnership. I believe that we're the second largest partner. We have 119 data circuits overall, and about 62% or 74 of those circuits are provided by INET. This allows us to really provide equitable services to our citizens in places like our 20 libraries, school-based health clinics, our elections offices, the Inverness Jail, and the Gateway Children's Center that's already been discussed. INET provides, as Julie said, a very cost-effective way to provide these circuits. It's available, from our perspective, anywhere Comcast has services, then our sites can have access to high-speed, reliable services through INET. And the bandwidth, as Julie's already mentioned, is very important to the services that we provide. And the need for higher speeds, higher bandwidth, is only increasing every day. It allows us in libraries to provide wireless services for citizens who have their own computers. It also allows us to provide computers with high-speed access to people who don't have computers. And because of INET, we are able to utilize our dollars to provide more direct services rather than provide infrastructure. So as a partner, we very much rely on these services and appreciate your support.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Commissioners. I want to, again, thank Rob and Sherry for joining us today. I particularly want to recognize Julie and Rebecca Gibbons of our staff for helping frame this presentation for you. I also want to thank Comcast, the dedicated volunteer members of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, the board and staff of Portland Community Media, and the staff of the Bureau of Technology Services. Although Director Mark Greinke is out of town, I'm happy that Ernie manager Vinny Puglia and other BTS Ernie staff are with us in the chamber today. We do acknowledge and appreciate their excellent work. Finally, to wrap up, I want to thank this City Council, which includes not one, but three of our current and former commissioners in charge, for the strong support and commitment you have always shown for these very important programs over these many years. As Commissioner Saltzman mentioned, these dedicated benefits and the investment by and for the community made possible by these cable franchise commitments, even though they're broken out on cable bills every month, and even though they're publicly discussed and disclosed every year in the budgeting processes of the MHCRC and the Council, sometimes seems so usual that we've not often had occasion over the past 10 years to separately present them to you and review the results. So though these programs may fly under the radar and not make separate headlines every day, I hope you would agree they're of extreme and ongoing importance to so many folks in this community, including critical and often fragile populations of students, youth, adults from all walks of life, all of them served by our schools, our libraries, local governments, and nonprofit organizations. Thank you again. Thanks to the Council for allowing us time after 10 years to share this information with you. And that concludes the Bureau and staff portion of our presentation.
Thank you very much, especially Rob and Sherry. This is our invited testimony, so there might be public testimony. But
thank you all very much.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. How many people have signed up?
We have 16 people signed up.
All right. How many of you are in favor of the Mount Hood Community Regulatory Commission? How many of you are opposed to it? We love it, too. Normally, we give 3 minutes for everyone. So I'm going to cut that down to one because we have found what you can say really well in 3 minutes, you can say even more effectively in 1 minute. Because this is, so we look forward to hearing what you have to say. Sue, would you call the first three?
Yes, the first three, Craig Rush, Neil Yosha, Eric Harrison. They'll be followed by Charles Lewis, Valley Oki, PC Perry.
Hi. Three coming up. We have three coming up all at once. Sorry, we call three at once. Four at once in this case. So who's the, yeah, Mr. Lewis. Hi. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Craig Rush, and I'm here representing Albertina Kerr Centers. We were a recipient about 4 years ago of a $180,000 grant from MHCRC. It allowed us to implement a learning management system that allows us to do distance learning. The goals were to, one, provide more consistent, higher quality trainings than we were doing just kind of on a random basis. Two, to help us better administer the trainings that we were providing. And three, and most importantly, save money and pass those savings on to our programs. After 4 years, we're happy to say that we are saving about $100,000 a year through our training costs. And those have all been, those funds have all been refocused into our programs. In addition, we've been working with our sister agency, Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare. They've adopted the same platform that we're using. And now we're sharing a resource to help administer. So we're kind of moving that out into the community as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Neely Yosha, and I work for Outside In, which has been helping homeless youth become self-sufficient for the last 40 years. And that means confronting stigma in addition to battling inner demons. And a media program gives homeless people an opportunity to gain employable skills. You can't get anywhere without using a computer these days, and learning to work on a team and show up on time is much more fun when you're making a movie than if you're going to sit in an office. It's an opportunity to share their stories. People love to share their stories, as you can see here every day. They don't get as much opportunity. And it's opportunity to share their positive messages and their resources with the community and their peers. You could say a lot of things about homeless youth. They're very resourceful. And so films give them an opportunity to share that knowledge with, most importantly, with each other, because they don't really listen to us. They listen to each other. And this gives them a way to reach a much wider audience. So ongoing access to technology and self-expression is as important as shelter and food. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Hi, I'm Eric Harrison with Multnomah Education Service District. I'm Supervisor of Network Services, so I'm the third big user of the INET. And my 1 minute will be on kind of one of the things that's unique about the INET versus using a commercial service is it's more or less a shared resource where if we're using commercial services, we're paying for a connection for every site between sites. With the INET, once we're connected, it's flexible and allows us to interconnect in ways that are flexible that would not be possible under commercial circumstances. This allows us basically to design our networks based on need, not by price. And we're using that to leverage resources and partnerships that otherwise would not be possible without the INET.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lewis.
Hi, my name's Charles Lewis, and from Ethos Music Center, we've received two grants, one in 2005 and one in 2009, and we use that grant support to videotape our student recitals. We also videotape things like the Waterfront Blues Festival's workshop stage, and it's just been an outstanding aid for our program. We have increased the visibility of our organization dramatically. We've become the largest music school in Oregon and helping us reach several thousand underserved kids every year. We've trained dozens of kids on video production techniques. We created jobs both with our video project and as well with the increased demand for teaching. And most importantly, it really highlights Ethos's outstanding students and musicians in the community. So I'd urge your continued support for the program.
Thank you, and thanks for all your work for the city. Next four.
Next four. Valley Olke, Dan Handelman, PC Perry, Bill Olson. They'll be followed by Doug White, Izzy Berlin, Casey Jarma, and Tricia Snell.
Hi, welcome.
Thanks so much. Bailey Elke, Director of Multnomah County Libraries. Good morning, Mayor, Council members. I'll use my 1 minute to tell you a story since I'm a librarian. The INET is the backbone of our public service access to public libraries at the public computers at the library. The story is about a young man from Guatemala who came to our community with a sixth grade education and no computer skills. He attended a bilingual computer lab at one of our libraries where he learned basic computer skills, wrote a resume, searched for and successfully found two jobs. He learned about the resources at Free Geek and qualified to get his own computer. He then came back to the library to use the Wi-Fi access that we're able to provide and use library resources online to practice his English skills, find information about his home country, and borrow a book to read in the Maya language. His story is not unique. He is simply an example of how lives can change for the better when we provide people with the resources they need to better themselves, and INET is a large part of how we do that at the libraries. Thank you for supporting this.
Thank you very much. Sir, Mr. Hanlon.
Hi. I prepared 2 minutes, Mr. Mayor. May I have 2 minutes?
For you, yes.
Thank you very kindly. I'm Dan Handelman. I'm normally here with Peace and Justice Works Portland Cop Watch. Today I'm representing Flying Focus Video Collective along with my colleague here, PC Perry. We founded the group in 1991. We've been producing video on Portland Community Media since then. And MHCRC's community grants at PCM have made it possible for the community to produce video and to anybody with a voice that doesn't have access to any other media to get on TV and make their own programming. And it's been terrific. Resource for everybody in the community, I think. Specifically, we've been able to spend the last 3 years, thanks to a community access grant from MHCRC, archiving at this point over 92% of the programs we produced between 1991 and 2008 on an obsolete format. We moved it onto digital tape. So that will allow us to continue to bring information and analysis to people from local, national, and international luminaries, labor unions, working people, poor and homeless people, and historical records such as peace marches around both attacks on Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, Somalia, Haiti, and other nations, as well as the first ever public hearing about the Joint Terrorism Task Force that happened here in these chambers in the year 2000. The report has been written, this report you heard today, in anticipation of the expiring contract with Comcast, I want to say that Comcast should be promoting the local city channels, including CityNet 30, which everybody's watching this on right now, to highlight how they are different from satellite TV. In contrast, satellite TV channels should be clamoring to get access channels onto their networks so that people can have local voices of their neighbors, unfiltered programs made right here in Portland. And we've been able to do this for 20 years because of community access. And we understand that the PGE monies must be used for capital equipment purposes, but having a world-class facility and nobody to run it doesn't keep Portland at the forefront of democracy. In the past few years, PCM had to shut its doors one day a week, has cut back weekend hours, and has laid off knowledgeable and tenured staff. And we're hoping that you'll see your way to make sure they have enough funds.
Thank you very much.
PC Perry from Flying Focus Video Collective. I'll take only 1 minute. I'm just going to highlight some of the things that we've done at Flying Focus. It is a video collective. We're a nonprofit organization, and we cover speakers, events, and voicing the voiceless. So I was just looking on OPB last night or so and realizing that the challenge of broadband lack of access as it's being felt in Nigeria is something that we have experienced just a few weeks ago and just last week maybe. in trying to understand what importance access to the broadband is. We, with 700 programs in our past, did not get into this thinking we were going to be archivists, but the information needs to be available for future citizens. We find that the broadband access has to be in many ways, as we've started, from using junk cameras to the most sophisticated. Now we have to continue on. And you may think that this outfit looks silly, but it demonstrates that it's one of the ways we use media. These tools are our tools.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Sir?
Hi, I'm Bill Olson. I'm a volunteer video producer at Portland Community Media. I've been there for about 6 years and have done about 2,000 hours of various programming.